Welcome to Season 1, Episode 11 of Family Planning for Docs, Thriving or Surviving.
This podcast is an extension of our platform at www.familyplanningfordocs.com, a website created for Canadian medical trainees to highlight useful information about family planning in a medical career.
Our group has a mission to inform medical trainees about their options regarding family planning while navigating training, career, and personal life.
Our research has demonstrated that personal stories are highly impactful, and we hope to provide access to a diverse number of stories to current trainees. On our podcast, we hope to capture the stories of medical professionals who have navigated the training process and a medical career while planning parenthood, parenting, and the supports that they had along the way. In this episode, we have Dr. Crystal Chan. We are thrilled to have you on our podcast today. And again, thank you on behalf of the entire Family Planning for Docs team for taking the time to share your story with us.
Thanks, Radha. Yeah, this is definitely an important topic, and I'm very glad to share my story. If it inspires anyone or there's any advisory warnings, you know, what not to do, I'm happy to help with that.
And I'm sure our listeners will appreciate that as well. So thank you. What does a day in the life of Dr. Chan look like?
Okay, so I'm currently a private practice-based fertility specialist. I do have an academic part-time appointment at the University of Toronto, but my main job really is clinical. I'm currently the scientific director and co-owner of Markham Fertility Center, which is a busy fertility clinic in the Northeast GTA region. So a scientific director, I direct the scientific activities of the clinic, but I'm also a very busy clinician. So I was thinking about this question, what does the day in the life look like? And I guess I would start by saying I have probably 70-hour weeks, so probably working 12 hours a day, you know, 6 days a week. The majority of that, probably 80-90% of that time, is seen with doing direct patient care, seeing patients, doing egg retrievals, embryo transfers, sonohistograms. So a lot of patient consultations as well as hands-on procedures. And then maybe 10 to 20% is running the business as well as scientific direction for the clinic. So a lot of administrative work, leadership committees, and things like that after hours. So see patients from maybe 7 to 6, and then sometimes 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. doing meetings and things like that. So it's a pretty busy life.
Yeah, I was going to say it sounds very jam-packed. How did you know that you wanted to be a fertility specialist? Was that something that you figured out early on in your training or something after residency?
That's a good question. So I think I was an OBGYN keener from the start. You know,
okay.
After I delivered my first baby, I was hooked. Or what first delivery, I was hooked. So I really loved female women's health, women's health and reproductive health. I fell in love with the science of IVF and reproductive medicine early on. So I wouldn't say that it was because I love babies or love the idea of having kids. I actually fell in love with the science of IVF in medical school and did everything that I could to work towards an OBGYN residency and reproductive medicine fellowship. It wasn't until I had kids myself that I realized that fertility medicine is really my calling, because then I fell in love with the idea of starting family, having children, you know, seeing that what it does to a family to have children, how it bonds the family, and then really fell in love with the subject matter along with the science of it.
That's awesome. And for our listeners that may be interested in pursuing fertility medicine or maybe just want to know what the training looks like, can you walk us through how many years of training it took you to be where you are now?
Yeah, so I trained to be an academic fertility specialist. So what I did was a medical school followed by my OBGYN residency. Within OBGYN residency, I did the Royal College Clinician Investigator Program. So that added on an extra year to my training. I obtained a master's degree very much in the subject matter of reproductive medicine. And then after that, I did fellowship at U of T. A little bit of my fellowship I spent at the University of California in San Francisco, UCSF, where I did a little bit more research training. And then I started on staff at Mount Sinai Hospital as a clinician investigator for actually quite a few years, and then went on to private practice. So I trained to be an academic clinician investigator, and at some point in my life decided to go into private practice. Overall, the training, how many years of training? I don't know what that is, 16 years or something?
Yeah, we'll let the listeners add up the numbers.
Yeah.
As you know, our goal is to chat about how you and other individuals have fit family planning while also having this amazing medical career. What inspired you to start a family? What was your motivation?
As I previously mentioned, I wasn't, you know, it wasn't always my goal to be a mother. I was so career focused for so long. And then honestly, as the biological clock that set in, you know, I was all career, school, work, until probably the age of 35, 36, where it actually hit me like a Mack truck, like the biological clock, and that desire to have a child before it's too late. That's what kind of happened to me. And around that time, I guess I should talk a little bit about my family planning, which is really defined by lack of planning. Previously divorced, so I was in a marriage to another physician. Both of us really prioritized career, and so I got divorced at probably age 36, something like that, in the midst of my biological clock clicking in, and I never had kids in my previous marriage. So really there was a huge sense of anxiety to, you know, meet somebody and have kids at that point. Felt a little bit like a hot mess at the time.
And so when you were kind of navigating, you know, knowing that you have this biological clock, what sorts of resources did you access? What support systems did you have at that time to figure out if you wanted to have kids or, you know, what that journey would look like?
Well, the ironic thing is, of course, I'm a fertility specialist. So I had all the resources and colleagues at my disposal. If I wanted to freeze eggs, if I wanted to freeze embryos, if I wanted to do fertility testing, it was all at my disposal. But there was a lot of anxiety around being, you know, recently divorced and what that meant for me. So I would say that at the time it was very paralyzing, and no matter how many supports and resources and knowledge and, you know, I had on paper, it wasn't that helpful. Luckily I did meet someone, I have a male partner. I did meet someone and we were able to have kids. I definitely pushed or deferred my fertility till quite late. So I'm sure this will come up soon, but I had three kids at age 37, 39, and 41.
What did sort of maternity leave or planning to have kids at that time look like? We have episodes where, you know, people had kids in residency. So I'm hoping you can shed some light on what your experience was having kids in your practice.
Yeah, so I had my first kid in practice as a clinician, investigator, clinician researcher in a highly academic setting. So the first thing I will say is thank goodness for my amazing colleagues. I had and I still have amazing, amazing colleagues that really shouldered a lot of my patient care when I was away on mat leave. They were very kind, very supportive, and that's key. Like, you know, no matter where you work, look for a good team. Mm-hmm. So I was able to take a mat leave, not long mat leaves, probably 2 to 3 months for each kid. Yeah. So that's definitely key to have that support system. And I also am lucky to have a supportive partner and parents who live with me and help take care of the children. Those are integral to success as well in my framework. One of the things that I realized after my first child is, as an academic, I didn't have time for anything. I didn't feel like I had time to be a good present mother. I didn't feel like I had good time, you know, had the time to be a good doctor to my patients. I didn't feel like I had enough time to be a good investigator and researcher. I felt that I was being pulled in many, many directions. And there were certain things that I was doing administratively or otherwise on the academic side that I felt were giving me less and less joy. So that was part of the decision making to leave academia. Although I love so many things about it, I love the research, I love the people, I love the teaching, I had to make a difficult choice, which was to transition away from academics and really focus on family and patient care.
Thank you for talking about that role strain, because I feel like a lot of trainees that might be listening to this definitely feel that they may be pulled in different directions and you're wearing so many hats at all times. So thank you for talking a little bit about, you know, difficult decisions about what you want your career to look like while also being a mom.
I do want to say one more thing about that, because I don't want to deter people from an amazing academic career either. There are some amazing people that are able to have children and thrive in the academic setting. I've seen so many of my colleagues really thrive and enjoy that life. But I think, again, you know, I was looking at what things brought me joy and what things didn't. And patient care, for me, I think had always won over academic duties, mm-hmm. won out a little bit. So I really, you know, decided to focus on that.
I know you talked a little bit about having a partner and then also having such supportive colleagues sort of in your circle. And I'm sure that made the world of a difference when you were having your children. Did you have any mentors in the field or anyone you could kind of go to at that time or maybe even now when navigating this journey?
Many, many. I would say, you know, when I was at my academic clinic, it was a group of six people, and they all had kids. They were all very supportive. They all encouraged me to take even a longer mat leave than I was planning to. So I see all of them as mentors. They were there for me. You know, they modeled good practice. You know, they showed me how you could thrive in academia, you know, despite having children or children. And then now that I'm actually, I had my third child recently. He's only 2.5 months old. So I had my third kid while working in this private clinic with my two partners, and they're private, always been private fertility specialists with no interest in academia. And they also have been extremely supportive, encouraging me to take a longer mat leave, being willing to cover for my patients. And, you know, they're also mentors in that context.
Amazing. Yeah, mentorship is so important in so many arenas of medicine. So that's great to hear that you've had that support as well. I know you mentioned you had three children and one of them is 2.5 months old. How old are the other two?
Yeah, so I have three children. One is 3.5, the other is 2.5, and then one is 2.5 months old. They're all in diapers still. Well, the oldest one is being trained and he's almost out of diapers, but it's tough. But it's beautiful at the same time to see them interact and, you know, bring that joy and energy into the household. Yeah, it's a blessing and a curse. To have very tight birth spacing is a blessing but a curse, really.
What were some unexpected challenges of being a parent that maybe you didn't plan for and have kind of been navigating?
I think it's normal to feel, I think, you know, when you're in medicine and healthcare and just in a profession, you encounter challenges and you eat challenges for breakfast, right? Like, you should be superhuman, and your patients and your staff and your colleagues should not sense weakness.
Yeah.
So the unexpected challenge of being a parent is that you will have many episodes of quote unquote weakness. Mm-hmm. You know, the kid gets sick in the middle of the night and you have to cancel clinic. Your kid gets sick and you can't take the call and you have to ask your colleague. There's all these things that you would never imagine before having kids that you would have to ask people to help you with. So that recognition that you're only human and that you have to step back sometimes, that's what, I guess, you know, it's coming, but it's still a little bit unexpected and it's painful to have to, you know, make those sacrifices, but you have to, because that's what you have to do.
What's been the best thing about being a parent? I'm sure there's so many amazing things that you encounter, but what do you look forward to when you finish a work day and get to see your kids?
The smell of the baby, you know, the sounds of the kids running around screaming. Those things are really precious.
I'm sure you'll have to update us on when they get older and the newborn snuggles aren't the same. Crystal, if you had a magic wand and could go back and change anything about your journey thus far, would you go back and change anything? If so, why?
I've always been a, you know, everything happens for a reason type person. So I have no regrets about any choice that I made in life. In fact, I think everything led me to where I am now and I'm thankful. Mm-hmm. The one thing, and this now I feel like the need to wear my fertility specialist hat. The one thing, you know, egg freezing, I'm sure has come up a lot in your interviews and on your website. The one thing that I didn't do it, but the one thing it would have afforded me is better birth spacing. I think, you know, I always wanted 2 or 3 children. And so when you start at 37,
yeah,
you know, tick, 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 tick. So my insane birth spacing was a result of that. So perhaps, hindsight is 2020, but perhaps if I froze eggs, it would have given me a little bit more breathing room. So it wouldn't be rapid fire, you know, first basing. Why didn't I egg freeze when I had it at my disposal and I worked at a fertility clinic? Again, I think it was just massive anxiety and paralysis from the drama in my life for a few years. So I just didn't have the headspace to think about doing it. But that perhaps is a somewhat regret, not regret, but something I could have done differently.
And actually on episode 3, we chat with Dr. Maxime Billick and Dr. Joseph about their journeys with egg freezing. So we'll link that in the show notes. And we'll also link some resources on our website for anyone who's interested in learning more about egg freezing.
I'm curious, as a fertility specialist, because I know there's a lot of media hype about egg freezing, and there is a lot of misinformation that's out there about it. If someone is interested in egg freezing, can you talk to us about how important it is to kind of seek the resources, talk to a physician, et cetera?
Yep. So egg freezing is an imperfect technology. It doesn't guarantee a baby at the end of it. As you know, it doesn't always work, but it is the best and only way we know how to take a detour from that biological clock and the diminishment of the eggs with increasing age. It's the only way you can save or preserve your fertility at a certain age. So I would say every fertility clinic I know of does egg freezing. Some are in higher volume than other clinics, but certainly it is standard of care at this point. So it would be as simple as asking for a referral or self-referring yourself to a fertility clinic, getting an assessment of ovarian reserve or egg supply quantification. That can be done by ultrasound and a blood test called an AMH. And then based on those levels, a fertility specialist would be able to give you a pretty accurate estimation of how many eggs you could yield in an egg freezing attempt. And then it's a pretty streamlined approach. So it would be a week and a half on average of daily fertility drug injections, followed by an egg retrieval under sedation. My clinic does the egg retrievals under full deep sedation. So people are asleep for the egg retrieval, it's painless. And then the eggs come out and mature eggs are frozen for future use. If the eggs are required in the future, those eggs have to be thawed. They have to be injected with sperm in the future by a process called intracytoplasmic sperm injection, or ICSI, and then embryos developed. And then sometimes we genetically screen the embryo, sometimes we don't, and then we would transfer the embryo in the future to the uterus and hope for pregnancy. Now, not everybody, as you know, that freezes eggs needs to use those eggs. That's one thing to be aware of. But it is, you know, a good technology that's available and should be considered by people that are know that they're going to defer their fertility to later years.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and expertise on that. We have, I think, even in medicine, there's a lot of stigma and misinformation about fertility, especially with things like egg freezing and IVF. So thank you for sharing that. Crystal, as you reflect on your own journey here, is there any piece of advice you would give to your younger self?
A lot. I would say to my younger self to give yourself grace, to be kind to yourself, to not have such high expectations that everything is going to turn out as planned. Or, you know, at some point in my life, I never thought I could leave academia. At some point in my life, I never thought I could carve out time to be a mother. At some point in my life, I never thought I would meet the right person to do this with. And then things kind of, you know, figured themselves out. Were they perfect? No. But that's the piece of advice. Expect imperfection and be okay with it.
Is there any advice that you have for other medical trainees, perhaps echoing some of what you've told your younger self, that you could tell other medical trainees, whether they be medical students, maybe residents or physicians early in their career?
Same thing. I have the archetypal medical training personality, which is hard on myself and type A and controlling and all those things. And it's the same thing, like be kind to yourself, self-care, you know, kindness and grace to yourself.
Amazing. And Crystal, we have one last question for you. It's in the name of our podcast. Are you thriving or surviving?
Depends what when you ask me. Today I feel like I'm thriving. It's a nice weekend. I'm going back to my kids after this interview. You know, things are pretty well controlled. My patients are doing well. So today I'm thriving. Some days when kids are all sick and the baby's crying and I have to get off to work, it feels like barely surviving. But that's the joy of life, is to manage those two opposing feelings. And it's always going to be a balance of those two things, I think.
We just want to give you another thank you, Crystal. It was an absolute joy just talking to you today and hearing about your story and what you went through. Thank you for being vulnerable on our show. You can find our guests' contact information in the notes from today's show, as well as any subject matter that was talked about and resources that align with those. This is Radha and Crystal signing off. Thank you.